Innovation and discovery have flourished at Carolina since its founding. Centuries later, these two things continue to play a major role in creating a sustainable campus. Here, on the Sustainable Carolina podcast, we talk with Tar Heels about the intertwined nature of sustainability. We're here today with Melanie Elliott, Sustainable Carolina's sustainability analyst, and we're recording this podcast less than a week after our first event of the year. It feels so good to be getting back to more in-person events on campus. This one put on by UNC Student Government. Undergraduate Student Government and Graduate and Professional Student Government led the way on this month's Energy Transition Town Hall, which took place on Wednesday, January 18th. The Institute for the Environment and Sustainable Carolina both supported the event. We're going to start off this episode by recapping last week's town hall, which Melanie spoke on. Thanks for being with us today, Melanie. As a university's sustainability initiative, we know how passionate students are about the energy transition, and it's a really important part of our work too. What was the atmosphere of the town hall like?
Yeah, so I was expecting the crowd to be exclusively students because it was a student-led event, but I was pleasantly surprised to see so many faculty and staff join the students at this event. And I felt like it was an informal conversation that might be because we were all seated and there wasn't someone standing at a podium speaking at the group. But I felt like everyone brought really good questions and came with the intent to learn something new. And I felt like because it was this more informal setting that everyone felt more comfortable to engage.
I really enjoyed the way student government set up the town hall. Mike Peeler, our chief sustainability officer, started off by setting the scene, talking about our climate action plan and its recent updates, along with our work to meet the goals outlined in Executive Order 80. Then you went on to present slides about where we are in reducing our emissions. You do a lot of presenting on our emissions with different campus organizations, groups, and classes. When you present, what are people usually most interested to learn?
So the category of emissions that people tend to be most interested in are our stationary combustion emissions. And I think people are most interested to learn that we've actually been making a lot of great progress in the last few years. More specifically, we've made more progress in the last few years on our stationary combustion emissions than we have in the decade prior. And that's due to an upgrade at our cogeneration facility that allows us to change our fuel mix to reduce emissions.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about that project that you just mentioned and what it means to change up the fuel mix?
Yeah, so what a lot of people might not know is that the cogeneration facility was originally constructed to only burn a solid fuel. So it has to burn something like wood or coal or some sort of biomass to be able to function. In 2019, a burner restoration project was completed that allows us to have a little more flexibility in that fuel mix. So we don't have to burn as much coal and we can supplement with something like natural gas, which has fewer emissions associated with combustion.
I know our attendees had a lot of questions about how we're moving away from coal at the cogeneration plant, so thanks for reviewing that for us. Were there any other memorable questions for you that you answered during the town hall?
I think a good question is, why can't we just purchase all of our power from Duke Energy? Which has a simple answer, but also really opens the door to the larger conversation around the scale and complexity of our energy system on campus. The answer to the question is that our district energy system, which is a network of underground pipes and wires, uses steam to heat buildings, generate hot water, and sterilize equipment, among other uses. This system is actually pretty efficient because we have one source that distributes energy throughout campus. So we still buy electricity and send it to over 200 buildings, but we generate steam for heating and chilled water for cooling at central plants, which is more efficient. So we can't buy steam or chilled water from Duke Energy.
And speaking of that web of pipes, that was a really amazing visual that you showed during your presentation. I really never would have thought that all of those pipes exist under our feet on much of main campus. And one of the questions that a student brought up was, you know, why can't we do geothermal on campus? And the pipes are a little bit of the issue. Is that correct? Is there anywhere on campus that geothermal could feasibly work?
We actually do have some geothermal on campus that was funded by our student organization, RESPC, and that is actually slightly off campus at the North Carolina Botanical Garden. So they are not connected to our district energy system, so it was easier for them to install this geothermal system. On campus, it's a little more complicated because, as you mentioned, all of our pipes are underground, but not just the pipes. There's underground electricity wires, there's underground telecom wires, there's all sorts of utilities underground, and that makes our boring space a little limited. Some universities have utilized athletic fields, but a lot of our athletic fields have underground cisterns, so not necessarily pipes underground, but large concrete structures. There really just isn't a lot of space for that. So that's not to say that we couldn't do that, but is it the best use of money to invest in geothermal when perhaps we could have an upgrade to the system as a whole?
So from what you've just told me, it sounds like geothermal would be pretty difficult to implement on main campus as it is now. But are there any other strategies that you're exploring?
We're always exploring the newest, best energy technologies. Another example are electric boilers. And those sound really great because we could not have a fuel that we're burning directly to produce steam. However, we would still be purchasing electricity from Duke Energy. And while Duke Energy is cleaning up the grid, they're still burning coal, they're still burning natural gas, so we wouldn't truly be away from burning fossil fuels to generate our steam. Another issue with electric boilers is that we need a reliable system because we are not just a campus of students, we also have a $1.2 billion research enterprise. We also have a very large hospital, and we have to keep that power going to those buildings. And the electricity grid is not always reliable. So another question that we get is, okay, well, why can't we have electric boilers that are powered only by renewables? Well, the amount of power that we would need to generate steam from electric boilers would require hundreds of acres of solar panels. And I'm not even sure if that space exists within the state. And another complication is that we would still be purchasing that power from Duke Energy. So there's a lot of constraints on where and how we can generate renewables of that magnitude. So when we're talking about geothermal or electric boilers, these are examples of proven technologies that we know are not going to work for our district energy system, which is why we continue to explore emerging technologies that may be viable for us in the future.
So you've just covered a lot of the questions that we get from students, staff, and faculty here at Sustainable Carolina. Some of the questions that I specifically remember from the town hall were the ones that focused on the intersection of our work and the student population. Some of your day-to-day activities involve working with students. You're at the Sustainable Triangle Field site right now, and you've worked with capstone courses in the past. What have you learned from students during these experiences?
Yeah, so I've learned what a great resource our students are. I was an undergraduate at UNC, and I graduated a few years ago, but I didn't take any courses that were project-based and had a real-world client the way these capstone courses do. So now that I'm working with these classes as their client, I'm seeing the true value of student work.
Have there been any moments when working with your students that have just made you really proud?
I have a lot of moments where I feel proud, but I'd say my proudest moments are when the students surprise me. in the fall 2022 semester, I worked with a capstone to generate project ideas for our Champion Sustainability Fund, which is for energy efficiency on campus. We need projects that have a high energy savings to cost ratio, so the options tend to be fairly limited. I went into the class with some preconceived notions, and I even told them that if they determine that a certain project is not feasible, that is equally as valuable to me as knowing that a project is feasible. So we split the class into three groups to identify inefficiencies on campus: electricity, water, and heating and cooling. I knew that the best projects for heating and cooling tend to be occupancy sensors or scheduling systems that better control the HVAC. Of course, then I was so surprised when this group identified an inefficiency that is impacting the entire building at Jackson Hall, our admissions building. The repair cost is relatively low, and the energy savings make a great return on investment. And I was really proud of this group. They even got one of our energy engineers to take them into the attic to show them the HVAC system. They really went above and beyond my expectations.
I just want to pause for a second because I think there are so many aspects of what you just said that embody what Sustainable Carolina is, that intersection between operations and research. Students taking a class and finding an energy engineer on campus to explore this building and see what's going on. The other thing that I liked about what you just said is that finding out that a project isn't feasible is just as valuable as projects that, you know, will make us money back. We're looking at different options and exploring to see what works and what doesn't. This is a huge aspect of sustainability work in general. And a lot of your work is trial and error and looking at huge amounts of data, which I first just want to appreciate because you go around to so many different departments to access this data so that you can analyze it and get it out to the public. When you were going to school here, is this something that you ever thought you would be doing?
No, not at all. I started my education at UNC intending to pursue astrophysics. My second and third year of undergrad were spent in an astrophysics research group with Dr. Kanapan. At some point, as I think many of us in the field experience, I started to have some climate anxiety. I still wanted to study physics, so I switched from the astrophysics track to the renewable energy track. At the same time, I started a work-study position within energy services, and I worked as an intern for the greenhouse gas specialist until I graduated, at which point that position was open and in the newly formed Sustainable Carolina. I thought it was a great opportunity to carry on the work that I had been doing for the last year and work with the same team of great people. So when I was offered the position, I accepted, of course. And what is different about Sustainable Carolina compared to sustainability offices at other universities is that we're housed within a research institute. In the same way that our hospital has the Cancer Research Center to keep our medical staff up to date with their cutting-edge research, Sustainable Carolina helps connect sustainability operations to relevant research on campus.
Campus represents a microcosm of what's happening at the state, regional, national, and even global level. And this isn't just true for the energy transition, but all areas of sustainability. Are there any areas of sustainability that interest you the most, or, you know, is it the energy transition?
So it probably won't surprise you to learn that what's most important to me about sustainability is energy. And I think the reason is because it seems maybe like our biggest challenge right now for several reasons. One is that we don't always have control over our energy sources. So for example, folks might have the means to own an electric vehicle, but unless you have a solar charger at home, you don't have any control over the energy sources that produce the electricity to charge that car. It's sort of the same on campus. You can change your behavior to be more sustainable, like utilizing layers of clothes to stay warm instead of adjusting the thermostat. But the campus energy transition is essentially separate from behavior change. Behavior change will reduce the amount of energy that we need to transition, but the transition itself is happening at an operational level. And that is why I wanted to be involved in campus energy. It seems like a good way to have a greater impact.
I like that you mentioned individual actions. Those small actions may not seem like they're making a big difference in the grand scheme of things, but They are important, and it's good to build those into your daily routine. Something that we've been hearing a lot lately is this phenomenon of climate anxiety and eco-concern. You mentioned earlier that you've experienced climate anxiety. Are you comfortable sharing some of that experience?
Yeah, so it can be really paralyzing to experience this climate anxiety because you get to a point where you feel like you're not doing enough, but you don't know what more you can do as an individual. And I think it's just important to remind yourself of all of the great work in sustainability that is already happening and just see where you can best fit in. One example is a student came to me a few months ago and said, I want to be more involved in sustainability. I think I need to change my major. I think the best way to be involved in sustainability is in changing legislation. And I don't disagree that legislation is really important to the energy transition and other aspects of sustainability, but this student was already doing research in the field of alternatives to lithium-ion batteries, which is going to be really important to our energy transition. I don't want anyone to think that they can't contribute to sustainability in whatever they're passionate about, whether it's chemistry, whether it's political science or art or whatever you're passionate about. You can always include sustainability in your work.
Thank you for sharing that with us. And you really got involved in the sustainability community through your undergraduate research. Your electric school bus article is one of the first things actually that I read and wrote about when I came into my position here at Sustainable Carolina in 2022. Do you want to talk about some of that work with school buses and the grid that you did?
Absolutely, I do. I can talk about school buses all day. So after I decided to switch to this renewable energy track within the physics program, I started working with Dr. Kittner and Dr. Cecil in the physics department to investigate the feasibility of using electric public school buses as storage for the grid. This was a daunting task for an undergraduate during the pandemic, but it was really fun and it ended up being a good project for me in the sense that it was something that I could do remotely, I could do it from home, and I didn't need a ton of support, but I did end up needing to reach out to other researchers who had done some work in the field. But it was a really great nexus of physics and renewable energy because we're talking about electric buses and how they can help support our energy transition. I really liked the project because a lot of physics is pretty theoretical. And even when I was working in astrophysics, the research was observational, but galaxies are really far away, so it's not really something as tangible as, say, a bus that you could go and ride and experience. So it's really nice to see that we're actually getting electric buses on the road in North Carolina, and we can test the model that I put together to see if these buses will actually be a viable solution for the grid.
Your article was the first time that I had heard anything about using school buses as a means of energy storage. And in doing that research for the blog posts that I subsequently wrote for our website, I learned a lot about the people around the country working on this issue. And I'll never forget when we were standing at our table at Cleantech Summit last March, and I spotted Jennifer Renix, who works for World Resources Institute and does a lot of work on school buses. I have this image in my head of you leaving our table and walking hurriedly to catch up with her and talk about school buses. And I thought that was such a cool connection that you were able to make at the Cleantech Summit. The cool thing about your school bus work and some of your other work on greenhouse gas emissions data is that you're able to engage with students of all ages, students here at UNC Chapel Hill, but also some in the greater community. Do you want to share a little bit about this aspect of your role?
Yeah, so that's one of the nice things about Sustainable Carolina being housed in a research institute is that there's a lot of public outreach. And so I've been involved in a few different programs. One of them is Energy Leap through the Institute for the Environment. And I'm asked to present on new cool energy ideas to not just students, but also high school teachers around the state so that they can incorporate new energy concepts into their curriculum. And I'm also frequently asked to present on our greenhouse gas inventory to classes on campus so that they can have a better understanding of how our campus system works.
Well, it sounds like you're making a difference for students here at Carolina and maybe even some future Tar Heels. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Melanie.
Thanks for having me. And thanks to everyone who was able to come out to the Energy Transition Town Hall. It was great to see everyone and hear your questions and engage with you that day. But if you have questions that didn't get answered that day or you weren't able to attend, definitely reach out.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Sustainable Carolina Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.